It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, live from WJR in Detroit. And for those of you listening to us on our network, welcome as well. Hi, my name is Foster Brown. I got a great studio full of people here. We're going to be talking about robotics and some young people who are learning a tremendous amount and putting it into these teens that are having battling robots. It's a whole lot of fun. We'll also be talking with Emily Hay about Facebook Home, that new thing announced this week, and the Tax Man will be here with some tips as well.
To the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Well, welcome aboard to what's, I think, going to be another fun program here on the Internet Advisor. So glad that you decided to join us for our show today. And as I mentioned, we've got a lot on our plate for the show today. Let me introduce our crew. Gary Baker, as always, in here in studio. Good to have you here, Gary.
Wonderful to be here, as always.
Mr. Ed Rudell, one of our great tech experts.
Last time you're going to see me wearing a flannel.
We hope. We certainly hope.
Unless you have your shorts in flannel. Never mind. And also with us is Shane Hamlin.
Hey.
Thank you so much for being here. Shane is another one of our tech experts.
And Cal is what, doing ice skating?
He's
going to Lake Placid in a few weeks.
He's not skating.
No. He's judging, auditing, I think is what the term is.
Yeah. He's doing the technology, I believe, yeah.
Well, today, guys, we've also asked Emily Hay to be with us. Hey there, Emily.
Foster, hi guys, how are you all today?
Hey there, social
great.
Media.
Thank you for joining us today. The reason we've asked Emily in today is because this week, yesterday, as a matter of fact, I watched the live introduction of it. It was rather fascinating. I don't normally, just kind of timed out so I could watch Mark Zuckerberg introducing this thing that he called Facebook Home. And I knew we needed to get you on, Emily, to talk just kind of quickly today, at least, the high points about what is Facebook Home.
Sure. Well, thanks, Foster. If you watched Mark Zuckerberg address the audience, you noticed how he opened it up by saying, today we're going to talk about that Facebook phone everyone's been asking about.
Yeah, well, that wasn't true, was it?
Not so much. A bit of a stretch. But in simple terms, that's at least what some of the fuss is about. You know, Facebook says, well, is making a phone really the best route for us
yes,
to go? No,
yes.
But we're definitely going to change up everyone's experience with their phones.
Matter of fact, he made quite a point of saying the fact that we don't want to build a phone. That would end up just being one of many in a field. And I think it's brilliant.
Giving the numbers to something like, you know, why would we want to limit ourselves to only like 10 million market when we have a billion subscribers?
And then he went ahead and put it on an HTC phone.
On an Android platform. Yeah. Essentially, am I right in saying this, that Facebook Home is kind of a start page, a rather elaborate start page for the Android phones right now, and specifically for this HTC first phone, it's called, that it's essentially just like a home page, like an elaborate start page. Am I right on that?
Sure. So that's a great way to look at it, Foster. He is really changing up the way that we use our home screen and the lock screen. And he was careful not to call it an operating system. And we already talked about it's certainly not hardware, but just a suite of software that's going to really change up the way we interact with our phones from the very first time you turn it on.
What do you make of this so far? Because I know that you are very much into, as a consultant, helping your clients to use social media effectively. Do you think this is overkill on Facebook's part, or is this really clever?
Well, I think it's incredibly clever because at the end of the day, Facebook is helping each person with a smartphone in their hand use Facebook even more. Mm. So I think for, you know, the businesses, small businesses that we work with, it's just another reason to be happy that you, you know, have established a presence on Facebook, because essentially, like we said, this is going to make people that are already really active on Facebook be even more active on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. So what about the rest of us, Emily? you know, I use Facebook, but it's certainly not going to be my start page.
Sure. Well, I'm one of the rest of us too, Gary, because I'm an Apple person, and the only A word that Mark said yesterday was Android, and so it's the only phone that's going to be able to use this Facebook Home interface. And to be honest, I'm a little jealous. I thought it was a really slick product demo.
But aren't they the only phone that really can use this interface? I mean, Windows 8. It's already built. That's what it is, like, basically. Yeah. And Apple has their, you know.
Right. Well, and Apple doesn't have an open system like Android does.
Nor does it really have a good home screen.
Yeah.
And
and that's, you know, I think Windows 8 has a great home screen.
So will they be able, I think along the lines of Gary's statement, will they be able to roll this out then to other app platforms?
So.
Yeah, I mean, I think they said April 12th was the date that any person with an Android phone made by Samsung or HTC will be able to download this in the Google App Store.
So this is downloaded like an app, and instead of being nice and going to where apps go on my phone, it will come up every time as my homepage, basically.
Exactly. So if you want to still access all your great apps, it just requires another quick swipe.
Yep.
But
yep.
Again, your home page experience, and like we said, even that lock screen is going to have almost, I think it's like a slideshow. Like any photos or things that would be going through your Facebook news feed are now going to be, you know, slowly waving through and almost like a slideshow on your home page.
So Emily, if I turn it on, I go to Facebook. If I normally go to Facebook as my first thing that I do, this is wonderful because then I don't have to make two clicks to get to Facebook.
Right.
But if I go anywhere else, use any other app, try to get to email, try to get to my text, try to get to anything else.
Your contacts, your calendar.
My calendar, anything else, it's two clicks.
You're exactly right.
So why would I do that?
What a huge hurdle he's helped us overcome, though. If you're already spending, I think what they said, 20% of people's time on smartphones is using Facebook. So he's technically, you know, making it really easy for us.
The other thing I think they've done is the same thing that Windows did well ahead of them is the People Hub.
Yep.
Where you take all of your emails, all of your text, everything else is organized by people, not by application. So I don't go to Twitter for my Twitter stuff. I don't go to messaging for my message, et cetera.
It's all there.
The only thing I want to see is the end user license and see if it's as open as the user license within Facebook. I don't own the content. I don't own the photos that are published. Right.
Mm.
What about my contacts? If they add calendaring, am I going to start receiving ads in the near future? Is it going to be a bait and switch? I mean, it's great news that it's coming out now, and I'd like to try it.
All right, Emily, these are questions we can save for next week when you'll come in, right?
Sounds great, you guys.
Emily Hay will be back in studio with us next week, and we'll have a chance to see what some of the analysis is this week as people are using this new Facebook Home, and certainly have many more questions as well. Emily Hay, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, guys.
All right, guys, back in just a minute to talk about robotics.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Well, I tell you, this studio is veritably humming with energy here. The geezers have stepped back, and we've got a lot of young folks who are in here, and I am delighted to represent, we'll call them young at heart, at least. Nah, Steve Heyer, I think, he'd still qualify as younger. Steve, welcome here. Steve Heyer is the CEO of IGD Solutions, which is the company that hosts our Internet Advisor website. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, good to have you back again, because I know not only are you a certified geek and somebody who runs an ISP, but you are also passionate about education, and that's part of what brings you here with Team Rush. Why don't you talk a little bit about the team members who are here, and I'll introduce them, but just in general, what Team Rush is.
Sure. Team Rush is our Clarkson High School first robotics team, and it's really exciting as a school district to have a first robotics team because this is an opportunity to put Clarkston, Michigan, a small community 50 miles north of Detroit, on the map really globally. And I'll let these kids kind of talk for themselves about what they do on the program, but as a school district, we're very, very proud of these kids and what they've been able to accomplish. And the FIRST program itself is really something that teaches engineering and technical skills in addition to communication, self-confidence, and a lot of skills that really make people successful whatever field they go into in the future.
Now, we're sorting things on our website right now, but there are two things to look for here. One is FIRST Robotic, which is a national – international?
International.
International program that uses what robotics is a way of teaching young people science and getting them involved hands-on, right?
Absolutely. It's really about giving kids a taste of what we call STEM, or science, technology, engineering, and math, to see if they like it. If they do, it might be something they want to go into. You know, typically kids think math is hard or science might be difficult. This is an opportunity to give kids exposure to it to see, hey, it could be a lot of fun. It could be interesting on many different levels.
Jordan McMichael, let me ask you, first of all, step up to the microphone, get it close to you. Yep. What got you involved in the Team Rush and the FIRST Robotics?
Last year I had joined Team Rush, and what really brought me towards Team Rush, and I had seen a couple of my other friends join Team Rush, and I saw, hey, this looks kind of cool, and it's something that really fit what I was into. I was into math, I was into science, but then I joined Team Rush, and now it's been really awesome, and I would never say don't join Team Rush because you don't like anything. It's one of the best opportunities I've ever had.
Yeah, and Reagan, let me make sure I get the name, Reagan Havens, right? He's next door. You're a 12th grader too, right?
Yep.
How long have you been part of this team?
This is actually my third year on the team, My sister was on the team for 4 years, so it's kind of my fifth year.
Girls rock. I love that. Yeah.
What I love is that most of the time, and most everybody else here are young men, and Reagan, you're the team captain as the only woman here today. Are there other women on the team?
Yeah, there's actually 10 girls on our team, so they make up a third of the team.
Wow,
that's
very
fantastic.
Cool.
Very to cool. See awesome. Girls getting involved in that. You know, for Gary and I's passion, we have daughters. His daughter was with us 15, 16 years ago on some of our first programs. We're delighted to see you involved in this as well. We also have Cameron with us in this first round here. Cameron, now you're in 10th grade. How long have you been involved in this?
This is my second year on the team.
What drew you to it?
Well, I had just moved to Clarkson when right before I joined Team Rush, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do. But then I saw this robotics club that I thought of it as, and I did the interview, and I joined the team, and then through doing events like the regatta and building the robots, I actually learned that it was a really close-knit robotics team, and I really learned to love it.
So I got to ask you, we have an old veteran here, pardon me, Eric Schultz, who's in. You are a graduate, right?
Yep, I graduated last year.
You were part of Team Robotics for how many years?
A part of Team Rush for 2 years, my junior and senior year in high school.
What kind of things did you guys build?
We build the main robot each year. We build our competition robot, and we actually build a duplicate, our practice robot. So we use the practice robot in school assemblies. We actually practice. We practice while kids are eating lunch in the lunchroom at high school before, so the whole school can see our robot and see what we're doing as a first team.
What is it, like R2-D2 serving food, or what is it?
No, we actually set up a practice field where we have implements from the game. Where we're like last year we had basketball hoops set up, and our robot was actually playing against members of the high school basketball team. Shooting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, shooting hoops with them.
Could you lend that to Michigan? Just tonight.
I was going to ask Jordan, what is the? I know you said there have been like basketball was one of the things. What's the focus of Team Rush this year?
Well, within the game this year, the game's Ultimate Ascent, and the gist of the game this year is shooting frisbees and then climbing on a pyramid at the end of the game. Team Rush's strategy this year was designed so that we would be moving between ends of the field shooting frisbees, and then after that, at the end of the match, we would be doing sort of a 10-point climb, which is about 30 inches off the ground.
Okay, so this means, Reagan, that you're going up steps? You make the robot go up steps?
No, it's actually a sort of a monkey bar structure, and you climb up different rings. The higher the ring is, the more points you get. So we would climb up the first ring. So that's 10 points.
Well, you know, Cameron, these things look like monsters. I mean, pretty bulky kind of things,
yeah,
from the
huge
pictures that I've seen. How do they move that? I can see them throwing a Frisbee, but moving like climbing?
Yeah, it's pretty intense. You have to actually we personally use this system called Power Takeoff, where we're taking the motors that we're using for the wheels, and we're actually putting that into climbing the tower. So we're grabbing onto it and then telescoping up. So it's a really neat process. A lot of teams are having fun with it.
Now, Steve, how do the adults figure into this, working with the kid? Do you have, like, engineers and other folks like that working with them?
Yeah, I'm certainly not the chief engineer, because engineering is not my forte, but I think we have 16 different mentors. Is that right?
Wow.
Many of them are alumni that have come back, so there's kind of an unwritten rule on the team to say, you know, hey, if you've been positively impacted, maybe you want to join another team or come back and help our team, and that's really why Eric's come back and helped us this year. As he's moved on, but we have all different sorts of experts on the team, from some of the business operations to the engineering, mechanical programming, machining, a lot of different functions that,
so,
that
I mean,
adults
other,
help kids with.
Other businesses in the community also get involved in helping you guys with, Reagan, with like the equipment itself?
Yeah, one of our mentors, James Slemons, is actually from Magna Powertrain, which is a big engineering company within our community. And then also Borg Warner. A lot of their mentors come and help our team. So a bunch
now, this isn't like the Pinewood Derby, you know, where the rocket scientist puts the thing together for you, is it?
No, all the students are, they're manufacturing the parts and they're assembling the parts. The mentors are there just to oversee and make sure that no one gets hurt.
So how do you fund this, Steve? Is this through the school board? Is this parent involvement?
As a school district, the funding is really the best part, because it doesn't really cost the school district anything, and that's actually a big focus of, as a team, what we do. This team has been around for 17 years, and this team really tries to help other team answer that very question. There's no set budget for each team, but Team Rush spends about $63,000 a year, and that's money that has to be raised every year.
Most
of that budget is for travel. So this year we went to St. Joe's for a tournament, we went to Livonia, we went to Duluth, Minnesota, we're going to the Michigan State Championship next week, and then St. Louis. It's a lot of hotel rooms, it's a lot of busing, a lot of food that has to be paid for, and the majority of the dollars is really the travel, the entry fees that goes into that. So we have a number of different, I would say, very innovative fundraising.
Okay, I see cookies, I see popcorn, at seasonal, what are the, you know, wreaths at Christmas. Cameron, what do you do to raise
it? Actually, our main fundraiser is the cardboard and duct tape boat race, known as the Regatta, that we have each summer. And cardboard and duct tape boat race. Actually, what happens is the students on our team, we get divided into teams of four, and we're tasked with building a boat out of nothing but cardboard, duct tape, and a one-part sealant that has to fit at least four high schoolers on a boat.
Oh,
this gets really exciting, because it gets the community engaged. And from a list of over 1,000 companies from the Chamber of Commerce, we talk about the regatta, and we talk about how exciting it is, and we actually get sponsorship from that.
That is wonderful. Hey, listen, we're going to have another crew of people in here, but I want to thank Jordan McMichael. Thank you very much for joining us, and good luck to you. Reagan, team captain. Reagan, thank you very much. Reagan Havens. And also Cameron. We just heard from him, Cameron Razdar, and the old pro himself, Eric Schultz. Thank you so much for stepping in here. Steve, we're going to have another set of the young folks come in, and we'll talk a little bit more about that experience of putting together and some competitions that you guys have just come back to. We're talking about an exciting group of young people who are involved in Team Rush, part of FIRST Robotics out of Clarkston, Michigan. Proud of their performance. And Steve Heyer from IGD Solutions is here as well. By the way, we're talking about the taxes coming up with the Tax Man this next segment as well.
To the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. We are robotic, this part of our program. By that I mean we're talking with a group of young people from the Clarkston school system who are involved in FIRST Robotics, an international organization that helps young people to learn about math and about technology and engineering, hands-on, putting together these incredible robots, and they compete. And Steve, thank you very much. Steve Heyer is with us. He's the CEO at IGD Solutions, and they are the people who keep our webpage on the air. And also,
And many others as well as a hosting company.
Could
be yours.
Yes, right. It could be yours as well. Thank you. Steve is also here, though, as a real passionate promoter of education and technology and education in Clarkston. Right, Steve?
Absolutely.
All right. We're going to talk a little bit about the value of that. Could you introduce the other folks who are with us right now kind of quickly, the other team members who are
here? Sure. We've got Matt Pasco here, John Havel, and Carter Zielinski here, all on the team this year in different areas.
Okay. So that was Matt. I'm just cranking my score sheet. Yeah. Matt Pasco.
How large is the team? I mean, this is a pretty good-sized
team. Matt, why don't you talk about that?
Right now on the team, we have 33 members, and we actually have a large number of girls on our team. We have 10 girls on our team, and we've seen a lot of our members from past years come back as mentors.
Excellent.
Matt, I want to ask, what's the significance of the twinkle in your eye when you say you got all these girls on the team, huh? It's a great way to pick up, to make contact with young women in your educational process.
Well, I mean, it's great because they add value because there's a lot of testosterone that goes on from the guys, and they add a lot of different insight, and that's actually a lot of helpful. It's very helpful to our team.
Good, and usually I found that they're actually more accurate. I won't ask you to comment, but I'll just say that usually.
Okay, and we have some of you. Tell me your name again, so I can remember.
John Havel.
Okay, John. And how long have you been pro and in the program?
I've been on this is my second year, and and I joined up through our CSM Tech program. I was really interested in math and science, and I saw this robotics program, and I was like, this is neat. I want to join. Build some robots.
And yeah. Get some hands on. Now, you guys have just come back from a competition. What was the competition you were in?
Livonia.
In Livonia. How'd you guys do?
We got finalists, and we got a Motorola Quality Award, which is a really big robot award.
Okay, and so what did you do? Now, I can't tell me your name.
Carter Zielinski.
It's folks, I got a list here. I'm trying to keep track of everybody here. Carter, what did your robot do in that competition and what it's going to do now in the next one?
So the game was to shoot frisbees as well as climb a 10-foot
Okay,
computer.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, exactly.
So,
And how did your machine do? How did it perform?
So there's a ranking system, and we were actually ranked first.
Oh.
And then there were actually six robots on the field, and then so there's three robots on what's called an alliance. So there were three of us, and then our team was actually the finalists.
Okay. Now, when you say there's an alliance, you mean that the three of the teams work together?
Yeah. Against three other teams.
Against three other teams. Is this like the ultimate fight kind of thing?
I was thinking Risk, you know, which one, you know.
What is it like that? I mean, where they kind of go at one another?
Well, first is more for what's called cooperation, where it's a competition, but we're still trying to work together, each team for a common goal. So, yeah, we're competing against other teams, but in previous years, the separate alliances actually had to work together. And if they did work together, they get more points.
I got you. Okay. So cooperation is highly valued as well. That is really cool. Is there like one person, John, who drives the machine?
We actually have three people that drive the robot. So
wow.
We have our coach and two drivers. And then we also have a human player, which is at the end of the game, the human player actually throws some of the frisbees across the field to try to get other points. And
Wait, how does that work, Carter? How do humans get involved in this robotic thing?
Well, after 30 seconds, when the game is left, it's a 2-minute and 15-second game. The human player, there's frisbees behind the line, and they have to try and throw frisbees over 54 feet into a goal and try and get extra points.
Oh, that is really cool. So there is the human skill aspect of it as well. The humans aren't left out entirely. Steve, let's just kind of quickly, with these young people who have been in here right now, what is the value for an educational system like Clarkston to have something like this going on?
Really, what I said earlier, it puts us on the map globally, and Team Rush has reached out and really touched other teams and folks in 44 different states and 9 different countries out there that have heard of us, used some of our materials, and really, really been aided by the 17 years of experience that these kids and this team has brought to the table. And 17 years.
Wow. I got to believe that this is great on a resume, on a college application.
You know, all of the skills that go into that in terms of interviewing, preparing, learning how to answer questions, learning how to talk to people, and the confidence that goes with giving some good answers really aids. I mean, you interview for just about everything you do these days.
Right.
You know, as you get into college, any special programs, scholarships, you interview. And, and just having that skill alone or having a good resume, you know, these kids come to the team, they don't have any resume. And they're usually not thinking about that until sometime in college. You know, a lot of awards and things you apply for require that. That's one of the trainings we go through. So we put these kids through a lot of different trainings, both technical and, you know, both in how to be an actual human being and not what we call
the teamwork aspect of it, I think, it really is a great part of it. You can't
– absolutely.
Not one person runs this – either builds it or runs it. And I think that just working as a team – it's a tremendous experience. Guys, I want my salute to you. This is Team Rush, and they are at, out of the Clarkston School System. Steve Heyer, thank you so much for bringing these folks in. And Matt Pasco, thank you for being here. John Havel and Carter Zielinski, thank you, guys. And to all the rest of you, and to Captain Reagan. Where's Captain Reagan back there? Salute to you. And good luck. Next next competition is where? Where's it going to be?
Eastern Michigan University.
And that's going to be when?
This is next Thursday.
Woohoo! Wow. All right. Well, let us know what happens. We want to be able to post it and to get some pictures of it as well, okay?
Definitely.
And then, Steve, we'd like to have you back because we initially contacted you about the what you're doing with spam filtering and how you're keeping us that have our email systems through you, how you're keeping us safe and keeping the spam away from us. And you said, I got something better. We got to talk to these guys.
So thanks for ceding that time for
it. We'll have to have you back and talk about what we originally wanted to talk about.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, one other aspect we thought we would get to this weekend because the day draweth nigh, and that is the April 15th deadline. And to talk about something that's a very important part this week for the adults, matter of fact, this month, we're talking about taxes and tips. And Daniel Hoops is with us from Walsh College. Dan, thanks so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor.
Well, thanks for having me, Foster. It's a real honor to be on your show.
A lot of energy in here, and I know that you must be a busy man this time of year with tax preparations. Can you kind of quickly give us some tips for people, some things to keep top drawer as they're getting ready, some of them who haven't got their stuff done yet, getting ready to get their taxes out?
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting. There are a few things that people don't realize when they're filing their taxes. We hear about people who are concerned about getting audited, and that's always something that everyone has to worry about. But I'll tell you one of the number one reasons why people will get some type of an audit, whether it's a letter audit where the IRS will say that there was a mistake or there was an inaccurate number that maybe you included on your return, that people make errors all the time, very simple errors, whether it's using the wrong Social Security number, maybe for a dependent child, or, you know, incorrectly adding up a particular thing. And when the IRS receives your return, they're expecting you to have an accurate return. And so the number one thing I can tell people, Foster, is to make sure that you double-check every single item on your return, because if there is a mistake, you will be hearing from the IRS.
Yeah, fact-checking is very important to this. As you said, even down to the – you might kind of think you know your Social Security number backwards and forwards. Yeah, you could one little letter, one little number off, and you can have a world of problems in there. What are some other things that are kind of flags for the tax man as he looks at your return?
Well, number one, it would be whether or not you've got all of the proper numbers included on your return. We, you know, we receive as employees, Foster, we might get a W-2, for example. Our W-2 has our Social Security number on it. It has our address, it's got the amount of income we have, and if you forgot to include the income that's on that W-2, that's a red flag. But one of the things that people often will not include might be something off of what's called a Form 1099. And that 1099 will get filed by the person who did pay you the income. You're supposed to show that income up on your return because you know, each of these things will match up somehow.
So that would be, for instance, like for a side job, and it's over $600, am I right?
That's right.
Yeah, it has to be over $600, what you may have done a side job for somebody or consulted or whatever.
But not when you're talking about 1099 and 1099-NIT for interest or DIV for dividend, that could be $5, right? Especially the way they're paying interest.
It can be a very low amount, right. Yeah. But what will happen is that form gets filed by the person who paid you that income because they're going to be taking a deduction because they paid that out. So the IRS is looking to see that you pick that up on your return as income.
And yeah, so I got a letter for $12 on interest that I didn't even know was there. Daniel Hoop is our guest right now. Daniel, I'm going to put you on hold for just a little bit, and we're going to come back. And one of the things I ask about some more of those tips, but also ask for your opinion. What is it okay to go with, like a packaged electronic application to do my taxes, or am I better off with a tax preparer, a human being? We'll get some more of that information from you. Daniel Hoop with us, from Walsh College, and we'll be back in just a moment with Mike Brennan and the Michigan Tech News.
Dateline, Southeastern Michigan. Experts declare there's no bad news left to report in Greater Detroit.
Greater Detroit has been named most incredibly magnificent place in the entire country. And cheerful whistling is the area's number one hobby.
Today, statistics show Greater Detroiters are even happier than Canadians.
Area unemployment has been whittled down to just one guy in Allen Park holding out for his dream job.
That and more on the Greater Detroit News Hour.
For brighter headlines tomorrow, donate to United Way for Southeastern Michigan today. Let's make Greater Detroit greater. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. To donate $10 now, text GREATER to 80888. United Way for Southeastern Michigan. Live United. A one-time donation of $10 will be added to your phone bill. All purchases must be authorized by account holder. Message and data rates may apply. Text HELP for help. Text STOP to cancel.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, and it's time for the Michigan Technology News with Mike Brennan, here every week. Hello, Mike. How you doing?
Fine. How you doing, Foster? How you doing, Gary?
Hey, Mike. Welcome.
Good. Doing very well. What's the top news item in Michigan this week?
Well, it's not so much Michigan, but I suppose Facebook is everywhere. Well, I think they're up to like a billion users at this point. They've done a hookup with the Android folks trying to develop a new cover feed called Facebook, called Home on Android. And so you would it would link through your phone, your Android phone, to take you to the Facebook page where you'd find new features like something they call chat heads, where when you get your instant messaging, you would see your friend's face pop up. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And that, we think, is a good thing.
Right? It'd be like the Jetsons. We'll have to put on masks in the morning if we answer the phone before we take a shower, right?
I like that. And other items in the news.
Well, Verizon has launched an unusual, not so unusual, but it's a different twist on contests. They're always looking for, you know, ways for folks to use their networks, wireless, cloud, broadband, et cetera, more, right? They're trying to develop a demand curve, it's called in economics. But anyway, so they've come up with this $10 million challenge to find innovative ways how the healthcare, education, and sustainability sectors can develop different ways of working on Verizon's various, you know, technologies. But and the top prize is actually $1 million, and then second place is $850,000 and on down. So, I mean, this is a pretty respectable contest, and it starts started last week, April 3rd, and then you have a few more months here to get your application in. But again, if you can figure out a way to work with Verizon, there could be some serious money in it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also have our friends. Actually, this is a story about a malware scam that went on a couple of years ago in September of 2011 that brought down 600,000 Macs, or at least infected them, where they used a fake Adobe Flash installer and installed some malware that got dubbed Flashback. Well, it turns out that all this came from some guy in Mordovia, believe it or not. Sounds like a bad B-movie. But some hacker in Mordovia that bragged out in some chat board that he's the one that did it because he was trying to prospect for new customers to say, see, I brought down all these Macs. You know, I can do the same thing for you. So, I mean, it's incredible, isn't it? I mean, you got hackers everywhere doing this, taking scalps, making money. Then you got cyber warfare going on.
It's a wonderful world out there on the internet.
Well, as you say, loose lips sink ships.
Yeah, right. So in this case, he's alerted everybody to who he is. Some authorities will be going after him.
Hopefully. Okay, a couple more items to wrap up.
Yeah, we got the Michigan Earth Day coming up again on April 26th and 28th in downtown Rochester. That's all things green. I had 50,000 people attend a couple years ago. There's booth there. There's educational stuff. So, I mean, if you're trying to look at different ways to make your home green, your business green, that's in the sense of, you're using solar or wind or even insulation, for that matter, better windows. Something really to check out, and it's all free. So, and there's really good food there and different things. And so I like to support John with his program. I'm a media sponsor. So,
excellent.
Then, finally, Saginaw County, they had seventh place finish in the Site Selector magazine for population centers of 200,000 or less. They had nine projects that got started in Saginaw County last year, and that was good for seventh place in the United States.
Now, Mike, when you say seventh place, you mean like the seventh best place in the U.S. to start up a company, especially a tech company?
Well, no, just projects.
Just projects.
Projects coming into the area, any kind of new business kind of projects, yeah. Economic development.
That's exciting because we've been on so many bad lists. It's nice to hear.
For Saginaw County, 200,000 or less, there were six counties in the United States that brought in more than nine projects. But, I mean, that's good. I mean, it's a start, and it's not really tech-related so much as economic development.
Well, that and a lot of that economic development in the state of Michigan is around technology as well. But it's good to hear that we're on a list of things that are good about our state. Mike Brennan, thanks so much for being here with us again this week. Folks, we have a link off of our homepage, but you can go to mitechnews.com and get the details on all the articles that are there. It follows technology in Michigan and events from around the country and the world that affect our fair state. Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Ross.
All right. We want to continue before we wrap our program up here with a tax expert that we had with us, who was Daniel Hoops. Daniel is with the Walsh College, where he specializes in tax law, and he's got some advice for consumers and businesses about places, a way to get ready for the tax man deadline, which is coming up on April the 15th. Dan, we had talked before about some of the key things in terms of taxes, checking your facts and checking them twice, maybe even three times, making sure proper numbers are down. And, for instance, also looking for all the forms that you should have in, like the 1099 forms. And, Gary, you mentioned something about the interest forms as well. I got a letter from the IRS that I had somehow missed $12 worth of interest that I hadn't reported. I didn't even know that I had that. But, I mean, you get statements from your bank, and those are kind of things to include is important. Other tips that you have for people as they're preparing for the tax deadline?
Well, a few things in particular. You know, there aren't a whole lot of things that we can do since it is after 2012 for purposes of maybe finding some new deductions or some income that maybe we delayed, or we're waiting to see what Congress is going to do, whether they're going to raise our rates, lower our rates, or what have you. But there are some things that people should keep an eye out for, especially as it relates to some of the deductions that maybe they don't think they qualify for. For example, if you moved for a new job, if you've got certain expenses, maybe student loan interest that you paid during the year or something related to maybe tuition or fee expenses for your job, these are all things that you can actually take a deduction for, and you may find that the amount that you have for your itemized deductions exceeds the amount that we all are entitled to for what we call the standard deduction. So there are some loose things that you might have lying around that you didn't realize you might be able to take a deduction for.
Yeah.
These are things you want to keep an eye out for.
Dan,
sure.
It sounds like one of the things you're saying is, you know, there's a lot of programs like TurboTax, some very popular ones where people can do their own taxes. It almost sounds like, though, you're saying that having a good tax preparer could help you. I have always chickened out and had a tax preparer do mine. And my daughter keeps on shaking her head. Now, she's got the MBA, okay? I don't. And I've always distrusted a very good friend of mine who's an accountant who does this for me and looks for those things. How do you choose a good tax preparer?
How do you choose a good tax preparer? Well, one, you want to make sure they're not in jail.
Okay.
Sorry. No, you want to make sure, you know, it's hard to really pick one over the other. Most times when people are trying to select a professional to help them with anything, whether it's an attorney or a tax preparer, the first thing they always look for is price. And oftentimes you will get what you pay for. So yeah. If you're getting something for free, you might not get the greatest service. But at the same time, we do have some services out there, voluntary tax preparers that do a great job, and they don't charge you a dime.
What is that organization, Dan Hoops?
There's the Accounting Aid Society. In fact, one of our faculty members at Walsh serves on the board of directors for the Accounting Aid Society, and they prepare tax returns in cooperation with the Internal Revenue Service. They go through the same training, and they're a very busy group preparing returns. They do have a qualification as far as what your income level is. So it's typically for lower or middle income.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I know a lot of old senior citizens, for instance, who probably could use that kind of help. So that's the Accounting Aid Society. And I tell you what I'll do. I'll work later on to put a website for that. Last question for any key website that we should think of for people to go to?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would definitely go to irs.gov, and if you do a /individuals/1040-Central, that is probably the number one site that I would recommend people go to. Most of us are afraid of the IRS, and the thing about it is the Internal Revenue Service is there to help us.
Yeah, they are definitely there to help us. Dan, I'm going to get that information from you again. We will post that, folks, on our website. Dan Hoops from Walsh College, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Go Blue.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. Hello, Foster Brown here with the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Our favorite time, because that's when we open up our phone lines at 800-859-0957. Phone lines are open right now, and it's for your questions. 800-859-0WJR, 800-859-0957. First come, first serve. We've got some phone lines open. We'd love to hear from you, and the only dumb question is the one that you don't ask. Look forward to talking to you.
Is the Internet Advisor. We're taking your calls at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. Now, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Let me introduce our tech crew that's here in a pretty impressive credentials. First of all, Gary Baker with me, the man who helped me start this program going on 16 years ago now. Gary, good to have you.
Thank you.
And also Mr. Eddie Rudell, who is a very highly skilled and been a long
stubborn.
Time.
Stubborn. You forgot stubborn.
Well, that's what makes you a good tech, because you will stick with those problems and get them fixed. Ed Rudell and Shane Hamlin is with us as well. And Shane, thanks so much for filling in.
You're welcome. So impressive, right? We're impressive. We are. It's like a dream team of tech.
What's neat about this is that both Shane and are daily involved in handling people's problems on their computers. And we're going to talk in just a moment about one that Ed dealt with just recently. But the neat thing for you as a listener is that you get to have that tech call free and in your native language, if that happens to be English. So the number to do that is 800-859-0957. Now, for those of you listening to us on a network and you may be hearing a recorded program, you can also get in contact with us through the Contact Us button. If you go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, the top right-hand corner, there's Contact Us button. It sends us an email with your question in it, and we'll get back and we'll get some answers for you as well. But right now, if you're listening to the sound of my voice, you have access to some very, very skilled people who have been at this for a long time, helping people with their computers. Again, the number is 800-859-0957, and Cindy will be with you in just a moment. But Ed, you had a problem this week I thought that was really worth talking about because of how sneaky it is.
Well, I'm not sure how this got on there, but ultimately, it turned out to be a rootkit on the computer. And a rootkit is something that it disguises itself. It either hides itself as a hidden folder or file on the computer, and it's undetectable by the file system within Windows, and that means undetectable through your antivirus scanners. And but this one happened to be hiding in the partition, like the old viruses of the early DOS days. Mm. And I'm really surprised that the antivirus software could not discover it and remove it there. The user, a friend of my wife's, Margaret's, was experiencing the problem. And the problem happened because her computer was infected with a rootkit. Microsoft security update was performed that updated key Windows files. And when they failed to update because the virus had a hold of it, it kept on looping and crashing and looping and coming up and failing to log in. Now, I've used the standard tools that we've discussed on the show many times,
right,
bringing it in safe mode, installing Malwarebytes, maybe installing CombiFix.
Right.
Both together, tools.
Using them to get a little cocktail of...
Neither one of them identified anything.
Wow.
So I used a Kaspersky rootkit scanner. That didn't find anything.
Oh.
I used a CombiFix recommended scanner and a rootkit scanner, and I can't remember what its name was. And then I went to work, and I did a few more things. I brought her hard drive from her computer to work, and I said, I'm going to back it up while I'm there and, you know, need to run a scan disk and check disk and, you know, all that other stuff. Turned out, I was surfing the internet, and I found people that says, have you tried Malwarebytes' new rootkit scanner? And
ooh,
I said, where did this come from? Why didn't I hear this? Malwarebytes is providing a rootkit scanner, and I downloaded it with a half a dozen other utilities, figuring I'm going to have to reboot
try one
this
of
computer.
Them, right?
And it found it right away.
Wow.
Within 2 minutes in safe mode.
Now, were you running in safe mode? You were running in safe
mode.
We just
had Masin
on, yes,
who started Malwarebytes,
right,
and just had him on the air.
He didn't say anything about
a couple
this
months ago, and he didn't tell us that.
No, he did say that they're putting on, and you'll find this now, folks, if you go to download Malwarebytes, and this is an important point that you were telling me in the car, that when you go to download Malwarebytes, you no longer get the prompt, do you want the trial version of the pro?
Correct.
What'll happen is it simply installs it. And then once you open up Malwarebytes, there's a tab along the top.
There's a tab along the top.
What does it say?
You know, I don't remember. I think it's program.
Yeah.
You know, there's a.
But anyway,
you
have to tell it not to run the trial.
There's a little checkbox that says don't run the full trial version.
So and then just keep that in mind, folks. Otherwise, what'll happen is you get this what's called Nagware. And Malwarebytes has been really good. I don't think any of us have a beef with it.
And if
they've
you want
been
to
doing
purchase
this for
it,
free for so long that now they want to charge like $25 a year. We'll give you
$25 a lifetime license.
Yeah, it's a superb. Yeah. That's right. Pardon me. A lifetime, and it's a superb active. Not only virus hunter, but it's malware hunter as well. It's
yeah, can
really
you
good
imagine they actually want to make money?
Yeah.
Or at least cover their
with
costs.
A good and with a good product
yeah,
as
at
well.
At least cover their costs.
That now
right
also has a rootkit. So, folks, when you're out there looking, you know, you go to our site to the toolkit, Ed, and
yes,
you can download it from there. Also, on our homepage, internetadvisor.net, we also right now have, you can go up there to see the news items that we have. And one of those news items that we have is going to be about this experience that Ed had and about the link is to the Malwarebytes.
Correct. And this is something that I'll carry on my flash drive with me with the half a dozen other utilities favorites that I have. How many utilities do you carry, Shane?
Oh, boy.
Now, you don't really carry it. It's all on the flash drive. It's not like they're hanging out of your pockets. But
I couldn't. You know,
what's
if
in
I
your arsenal?
I have probably... maybe about 15, 20 gigabytes worth of
wow
tools on my thumb drive. I mean, because there's a tool for everything. Everybody
yep
has their special one that they like. And they,
yeah,
it's
yeah
their go-to tool.
Oh, and that one that solved that one problem
yeah
3 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're right, because there's not one out there that does it all.
And you're always afraid to get rid of one, because as soon as you do, you're going to need it.
Yeah.
So you keep them.
And I've done things like the thumb drive that I have, is I call it a rescue disk, has those things on it. And then it also will have like Chrome, the browser.
Mm-hmm.
So
oh, yeah.
I can put that on as another browser for people and, you know, some of those other things that we've gathered over the years. But by the way, folks, if you go to internetadvisor.net, Ed has put together a marvelous toolkit there. Ed, thanks for sharing that story. I almost think we're coming to work here in the car. We ought to have a tape recorder running. We ought to be running some sort of a recorder and capture our conversations, because it was an excellent conversation about that. But in any case, folks, back to answer your questions. Just a moment. Eugene and Cindy will be with you, and there's phone lines open for you at 800-859-0957.
This is the Internet Advisor. We're taking your calls at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. Now, Foster
Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. And by the way, for those of you who listen to us regularly, you can now listen to us regularly. What I mean is that we are now officially on our spring-summer schedule, which means that the sports season at Michigan State University has ended for men's football and basketball. And since our flagship station, WJR AM in Detroit 760, is the home for Michigan State University basketball and football, we often will be shifted and you don't hear us at the same time. Now you can put a little bookmark in it for us. We will be here from 4 until 6 p.m. for those of you who listen to us on WJR in Detroit. For the rest of you who listen to us on our affiliates across the Michigan Talk Network and cities like Grand Rapids, Lansing, Saginaw, Kalamazoo, and Muskegon, at the times on your stations, we'll still be there. Those times, of course.
However, if you happen to listen to us on one of the other stations and have a question that you'd like to ask us real time, you know that you can call our number
and go
to their website at internetadvisor.net, call our number between 5 and 6, and you'll be able to ask us a question.
We can then be
a little more interactive because a lot of times we have to ask another question, get a little more information in order to answer it. Properly.
Exactly.
The other thing, when you go to our site, not only do you get the information about what the show is this this week and all the past podcasts from other shows, but last week we had Art and Jenny McCafferty in, and they actually videotaped us and put together a very nice little behind the scenes. So if you want to see us, I'm not sure you want to, but if you do, go to our website and look at the video. It's you know, we take it for granted that people understand what the studio looks like and how we interact.
But
now, what
the
you don't
chaos
get
in between the commercials.
Well, what you don't get is you don't get the chaos in between the commercials. Well,
while
you're listening to commercials, folks,
it's a lot of
arguing about this, that, and the other thing. We're helping each other. You know, everybody's crowded around one machine or another, so it's kind of fun. But you don't see that.
So that you'll find that, by the way, if you go to internetadvisor.net, you'll see that on our homepage. Right now, we have a little link that's down below the call-in one that says video behind the scenes at the Internet Advisor, and that's an 8-minute segment of March the 30th, the first segment of the program. So it's been kind of fun just to kind of see what's going on behind the scenes.
And thank you to Art and Jenny McCafferty
at
Great Lakes Sports Publications.
Really appreciate that. All right, let's go back out to Cindy from Westland, old friend of ours. Cindy, how are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Very well. Hey, how can we help you this weekend?
Okay, I have currently a Dell laptop that's about 5-6 years old. Whenever they stopped selling the machines with the XP, that's when I got this.
Okay.
And the backlight is gone on it.
It sounds like a new computer to me.
Exactly.
Any excuse, right, Cindy?
But see, the key here was this year was the year we were going to get a laptop for my husband.
Ah.
So now we're looking at getting two machines.
Ah, nice. Okay.
Okay.
And the good thing is that you can get two machines this year and pay the same price as you would have for one machine 5
yes,
years ago.
That's
exactly.
So that's
true.
Pretty nice.
Yeah.
So,
and there have been some recent price drops as well on the Windows machines.
Yeah, and Dell has some good deals going on.
They do.
And I'm just kind of trying to figure out what's going to be best for us.
Now, let me just ask the question. What operating system do you want to stick with?
XP.
Well, that is no longer. I hear you.
You're actually, I think, like 8, but it will take some getting used to.
If you went to Windows 7, and you will. Am I right, Shane? You can still find machines out there with Windows 7 on it.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. Well, you'll find a lot of them with Windows 7, actually.
Yes, yeah. you'll find a lot of machines on the Windows 7.
I'm still getting back in my chair when she said XP, so hold on.
Because the key thing, a lot of you folks out there use XP. We got a lot of mail on that. Mm-hmm. You use Vista. That's fine. They're no longer being supported right now.
Right.
They stopped the support on them from Microsoft.
And they're not, let's be honest, let's be very honest, they're not safe. Security-wise, they're just safe right now.
Right.
Well, what I'm looking at, the home computer is kind of like the workhorse. You know, all the Word documents, my taxes, all that kind of stuff. More standard stuff, not so much video streaming and things. Mm-hmm. A little bit, but not much.
Mm-hmm.
My husband is going to try to get into some more video conferencing and that kind of stuff through his associations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And part of my question is,
Windows 7 versus Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
But also, in particular, I'm looking at the Inspiron 15 through Dell.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a processor speed of i5 on the 7 or i7, which I can get a free upgrade to i7
mm-hmm.
if I get a machine with Windows 8.
Yeah, I guess one of the decisions, guys, what do you think?
And is there really that big of a difference between i5 and i7?
You won't notice the difference. Yeah, if you put them side by side, you'd see it. But if
in
you only
your,
had one or the other, you wouldn't notice the difference.
No, I know you're doing something.
And both of them are so much faster.
Get yourself
than what you
an
have
i7
today.
And get your husband the i5.
Yeah, there you go.
And I believe both are the i5 and the i7. I believe they're both quad anyway, right?
Yes,
they're
that,
both
yeah,
quad.
Yeah, you,
anyway,
right.
Quad core.
They're both very fast.
Yeah,
there is a
and then switch the stickers.
Yeah, there you go.
Ed, you are really devious.
So if you, Cindy, I think that if you.
Careful, he's listening to the radio in the other.
Okay, we'll be careful. We'll tell you afterwards, call us.
Okay.
Okay. if you were going to go to Windows 8, and I think there's some reason to do that, you may find that you don't want it to climb that learning curve right now.
Right.
If you did, I would get one of the touch screens. So I wouldn't
yes.
go with the Experian. I would get the Experian, but with the touch screen.
Yeah, they have it with or without the touch
right.
screen.
If you get Windows 8, I'd suggest such touch screen.
Correct. That's
period.
Right. Period. I would not. You do not have to get a touchscreen with Windows 7.
Okay.
However, Windows 8, the upgradability and the upgrade path in your learning curve, you'll start to learn now. You'll learn a little more later. You'll learn a little more later. By the time you get ready to replace this one, you'll have wished you had Windows 8.
What do you think, Shane?
But I think today, if you don't want to go with Windows 8, you can still use Windows 7.
Yeah.
And most of the bigger companies will not go to Windows 8. They'll stay
and
Windows
even with
7.
Windows 8, you can do most of your work on the desktop, which looks exactly like Windows 7.
And I think
that's what they had mentioned, I guess, that you
right.
can turn off the – even if we got the touch screen, you could turn it off and use it regular?
No, don't play with that. Don't worry about that. That's not – really an issue. What are you
yeah,
say,
because, yeah, if you're going to, well, I think you were mentioning, Gary, that most companies haven't gone to 8 because they don't want to train everybody. You know, they just can't afford that
right.
kind of training because it's not like going from Vista to 7 or even XP to, it's a big upgrade.
Yeah.
But,
and it's about time,
yeah.
but
mm-hmm.
you have to climb that curve at some point. Do you want to do it today?
And I think if you're going to, you know, like Gary said, you don't have to get the touch screens, but you might as well. If you're going to, I would get Windows 8 and I'm learning it more and more and more and more every single
yeah.
day. And you can always go to the desktop, which gives you the same feel of
yep.
Windows 7.
Yeah.
So you're not missing that.
I have a suggestion for you, Cindy, because we could talk about this forever.
Yeah.
Here's the deal.
Yeah.
You got two machines. Get one with
right.
Windows 7. Get one with Windows 8
yeah.
touchscreen. Seriously.
Okay.
Really?
And that, you know, whoever's the most adventurous would get the Windows 8 machine.
Oh, yeah.
I'm guessing that's you. That's right. That's I'm guessing it's you. Go ahead,
but now, when you're looking at that purchase, I think both of them will. You'll find some of them that you can get with Windows 7 that you can upgrade for free to 8 anyway.
Yes,
it'll be part of the deal.
That's right.
That's
so,
true.
So do it anyway. It's not going to hurt you. And if you decide you want them both Windows 8, just
yeah,
you know
you
hit the switch
that's
and go to
so,
8.
So I would suggest that along those lines, get one that's Windows 8. Get one with touchscreen that's Windows 8 right now. Get the other one that's upgradable to Windows 8
for free.
For free,
yes,
without a touchscreen.
Yeah,
and then of course, if you would go and turn down the volume on your husband's radio right now, we would tell you that as long as you're going with Windows 8 and a touchscreen, the Ultrabooks are very cool.
Oh,
you will
yes.
be the envy of all of your friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, you're, by the way, although the Surface Pro is the one that Microsoft is peddling hard, that's only a 10-inch screen. And while it's very good,
it,
no, I think you want something bigger, maybe up to a 15, but a 13 I think you'll find be very nice, and especially if you have an external monitor, which I would always suggest having with those smaller laptops that you can hook up when you get home.
Well,
and use that.
Yeah, you don't have to do it. I don't do it. But
I have found it really handy. Cindy, thanks a lot for your call. Hope it helped. And Dad will enjoy the choice as well.
Is the Internet Advisor. We're taking your calls at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. Now,
Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Think of this as your visit to the computer store where you're going to get some advice on fixing your computer, and it costs you nothing. Because it's a toll-free number, 800-859-0957. And as we're getting into our regular schedule now for the rest of the spring and through the summer up until about the middle of August, this is where we're going to be on a regular basis. You can set a little reminder for yourself wherever you do that on your phone or wherever. And if you've got a question that you would like to ask us, simply call 800-859-0957 between 5 and 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And we got a studio full of experts to help. And Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Shane Hamlin are in studio right now. And with us on the line is Eugene from Newport. Hey, Eugene, how you doing, sir?
Hi, Foster. Nice to talk to you guys.
Good to talk to you as well. How can we help you?
Well, I've got a little problem. I have a Dell laptop. It used to be my son's. It's probably about 8 years old, Windows XP on it. Kind of use it in my office for keeping, you know, printing checks and stuff. And the USB ports just quit working.
Mm.
I ran the software. I checked the Windows. It's recognizing them. I even deleted them and rebooted. I'm a little bit of a tinkerer, so I'm not, you know, totally ignorant about trying things. Read some stuff online. I opened the thing up. I tried to see if everything looked okay. And, you know, that's the part I'm really ignorant about is, you know, if there's any solders broken or wires broken. I didn't see anything. And the machine's working fine. The mouse works good from the little pad that's on it.
Sure.
But the mouse I plug in, there's nothing. The printer, there's nothing.
Anything you plug into that particular USB port?
Well, I've got I've got two on the side and two in the back, and none of them work.
Oh, none of them work.
Okay, so that's helpful to know.
That's a little different.
So have you run an actual hardware diagnostic? Do you know how to do that?
I may have ran some stuff to check the Windows, to check its, you know, the hardware. I've rebooted a number of times. I thought I've tried pretty much everything. I be honest with you guys, I wouldn't call you if I usually fix things myself.
I understand. Let's see if some of these old tinkerers here have any ideas. Shane?
Well, I mean, sometimes what you can do is what happens is the power. Motherboards, over a course of time, the solder gets old and
brittle.
It gets weak and warm and cold and hot, and it gets brittle and it does break. You're not going to fix that because you're never going to get that same factory solder as you. They don't make solder like they do back then. What you can do is it seems like you're not getting power to those USBs because if it was one, I'd say it probably broke or there's something off. Right. But when they're all down, it's the powering system.
I'm sorry. The part that I didn't tell you now, the two back ones, I don't know if I've ever used those, so I can't say they ever work.
They probably did at one time, and now they don't. But there's an actual, on the circuitry of the circuit board, there's an actual part of that circuitry that's controlling the power to power those USBs. And that is probably what is broke. Not necessarily the USBs itself, but I think the line to the power AC adapter. So
would Windows not recognize this, though? Wouldn't Windows say there's no hardware there? Windows, you know, I deleted all in the device manager, I deleted it all and rebooted, and it found these devices. Would it find them even if, I guess if the power is gone, but the device is there?
See, you got to remember, no power, it's going to recognize them on that board, because the board has some power. So the board has enough power, even just that battery, to recognize stuff that's attached to it. But what happens is when you plug something in that requires that boost of power from your AC, you're not getting that feed.
Right. Well, Eugene, think of it this way. There's a ground on the one outside, and the other outside is +5 volts, and the two centers are data plus and data minus. Sounds like you're a tinkerer. You probably know what I'm talking about. So if you were to stick a voltmeter in there on the two outside pins, if there's not 5 volts, you know that's the problem. And what's happening is the computer provides the voltages for the external devices. If it ain't providing the voltages, it's not going to be recognized because the device isn't powering up the external devices.
But
the
mice or the printer. It does recognize.
It recognizes them when he deletes them in Device Manager, so the chipset is being recognized.
Right. Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
So it's a motherboard issue then. One more.
I love this. This is like listening to a conversation in Ukrainian for me, which I don't speak. That's quite.
I thought that was quite.
Ed, you are quite. I love that, Eddie. That's a voltmeter. one more question, because we got some other folks as well. Go ahead.
I had one more problem with it, and maybe this explains it. I've had problems with that laptop, sometimes just shutting down for no reason. And I thought it was the power cord or something.
And the other day, I moved the mouse. I had an external mouse plugged into one of the ports, and I moved the mouse, and the computer shut down. Now, maybe that's on the motherboard. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, you probably have a short somewhere on the motherboard. At that time, you know, at that age, you know, the heat has probably got it's brittle. You know, probably the solder's probably just falling.
These things aren't made to last forever. Although with the price you paid for it initially, you would like it to.
Or what happened if that's the original mouse? If the USB ports worked up until that point, then what happened is that the wire and the insulation in your mouse, which you've used thousands of times, probably for thousands of days, you have, because you said it was 5 to 7 years old, became brittle. You actually probably shorted pin 1 and pin 4, ground and 5 volts, and you shorted out your motherboard and burned out that portion of the voltage going to the USB ports.
And so everything would work, but the U.S. I mean, I go on the Internet, everything else.
Everything would work.
That particular part of the circuitry, though, is kaput, as they say in German.
Listen to the previous conversation about Windows 8 and a new laptop is what I should have listened to, right?
Yes. Yes. Because today you will pay. I saw a Shane online that there's been a big price drop in Windows RT and the Windows Pros as well.
Yeah, they're coming down. You know, so but you can always listen to the podcast later.
Yep, you can check with it later on and get more information on that, Eugene. Yeah. Thanks so much for your call, and hope we have helped you and some of the other tinkerers out there as well. All right, let's keep moving on. And Bob from Garden City, thank you so much for being with us, Bob. How can we help you?
Yeah, thank you, guys. I'm running Windows 7. I went to your website, and I would like to download Malwarebytes. It's asking me to shut down my firewall, which is Zone Alarm, and to shut down my antivirus, AVG. And I've tried to do that, and I'm not having much luck. How do I do that?
I'm not familiar. Does installing Malwarebytes actually ask you to shut off your firewall and antivirus?
No.
I don't remember that ever happening.
No.
Where did you get the Malwarebytes?
I went to your tool section, and it mentions a couple different places where I can go to download that directly. Mm-hmm. And I went to one of those sites, and it had a window that popped up that said that I should close both of those down while it is installing.
Do you have the full version of AVG?
No, I don't. I have just the free.
I'm wondering if maybe the malware is detecting the firewall for the AVG firewall, and it's telling you to shut down the AVG firewall that you have activated, because most of the times I don't use the AVG firewall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I don't have AVG firewall.
And
the other thing, just the zone alarm.
And the other thing is that I want to make sure that you save the file to your computer somewhere like My Downloads or Disk Downloads.
Correct. I did.
And that the file name that you're downloading is actually called MBAM Setup. .exe because especially when you download from CNET, CNET will pollute the screen with areas that look like download now, and that's really an advertisement for a competitive antivirus.
Bob,
software.
I can't tell you how often that has happened to me that I've gone to CNET.
Right.
Which I respect in every other way,
yes.
But they build that site in such a way that when you go to click to download, you're not really downloading often the thing you want, but what they have advertised up there. It's PC cleaner.
Yeah. No, I realize that, and so I went to the other site that's on your website.
Yeah, the Two Cows.
I believe it starts with a P.
Should be Two Cows.
Well, there's a number of sites. Well, P?
No. I believe it starts with a P. It just directs you to another place where you can download, because I have had that problem with CNET.
Okay. Mm. So anyways, was the file that you downloaded actually called MBAM, which stands for Malwarebytes Anti Malware? Don't ask me to spell
that. That I'm not sure.
Yeah. So you want to make sure that the file that you clicked on and saved on to download, that the file name of that is actually called mbam.exe or mbamsetup.exe.
Okay.
And then if that is, then you know it's the legitimate program. And because the one I'm going to, let me see, I'm bringing it up now on for the Malwarebytes. And I'm sorry, File Hippo. I said Two Cows. And when you select download now, On the top right, download the latest version on the top right-hand side. It says it's 9.69 megabyte. You wait a few moments, and then it'll pop up. I'm just waiting for it. And it says MBAM setup. Yeah, on the bottom of the screen, it says MBAM setup. So I want to make sure that that's the correct version. Other than that, I can't think of why it would ask you to shut down your firewall and disable your other antivirus.
Bob, let's do this. We're going to put you on hold. And while we're in the break just right now, we'll see if we can follow up with anything else. And if we find anything in there, folks, in our conversation with Bob offline, we'll bring it to you when we come back on. We still have Jeff out there at Bloomfield, and there's room for you as well at 800-859-0957. The Internet Advisor on the air for you.
What does hope look like? It's in the rising walls of a home rebuilt, raising the spirit of a community reborn. What does heart sound like? It's in the rhythm of nails pounded into wood, a beat driven by the conviction that inspiration can overcome desperation. What does home feel like? It's in the faces of Americans who built generations of memories in their home and then saw it slipping away until friends they had never met turned out to lend a hand. For more than 30 years, Rebuilding Together has spread hope to homeowners in need, providing free home rehabilitation, making homes safer and more energy efficient. This is a place where you can turn dreams into reality. Go to RebuildingTogether.org and share the feeling of home.
This is the Internet Advisor. We're taking your calls at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. Now, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Riddell.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. By the way, our thanks to the folks behind the glass. Annie Nichols, thank you very much. Our lady of the telephones. Jason. I met her. No, I got it wrong again. It's Scott. Where's the word Jason come up? You must look like a Jason in my mindset. Scott, I am. This is embarrassing. Every week, I tell you what, tattoo it on your forehead. I almost said that. Anyway.
I'm going to bring a set of stickies in and stick it on that glass.
Do that. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Scott, I am mad.
Those embarrassing tattoos.
Whether my Alzheimer's kicks in every week, that's always a challenge. And then also, to all the rest of you, but Rich Lisinski and all the rest of the folks behind the glass, thank you so much.
Annie Nichols, our smiling phone answer associate producer.
Thank you so much, Scott, for helping us. That is incredible. In any case, I talked with Bob just a moment, guys, off the air, about his situation with battling antivirus programs, and we found this very often, that people who used to use Windows XP got accustomed to putting on a good firewall, which was Zone Alarms, an excellent one, and then they would put an antivirus software on there.
Well, and because Microsoft was told they couldn't put their firewall in,
right?
So then had some, you know, so that's when they pulled back a little bit.
And there was a market then for those. What's happened, folks, in the evolution of this thing is, if you have Windows 7, and this is my suggestion to him, and guys, quickly see your response on this. If you have Windows 7, I would suggest downloading Microsoft Security Essentials. It's free. It's maximized to work with Windows 7. It has got a great firewall built in. It's got Windows Defender built in. It is an active antivirus program. It's an excellent one. And then get rid of all that other firewalls and virus software, antivirus software. But you can add malware bytes, because malware bytes is out there to get the stuff that everything else didn't get.
And Combo Fix.
Yeah. And Combo Fix is, you can use those two in combination. But basically, Microsoft Security Essentials.
And it has a very small footprint.
That's
too.
Exactly.
It doesn't eat up a lot of resources.
A lot of these software suites, whether it's McAfee or Norton or whoever else it is, are constantly running stuff in the background.
Yeah.
That is,
it's like the U.S. government. Instead of throwing more money at it, they throw more CPU time. Does that sound about right? Instead of fixing the problem.
Just piling more CPU time on it. But in any case, Microsoft Security Essentials, go to Microsoft.com and you can download it from there. It's excellent. And then get Malwarebytes and put that on as well, and you're going to be pretty well set. But do get rid of the rest. Do get rid of the other ones, okay? All right, let's go back out to Jeff from Bloomfield. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How you guys doing?
Very good. How can we help you?
Yeah, I finally traded in my wife's old desktop, which dated back to 2001. It had two small hard drives on it and an external backup drive. The reason I turned it in was it was getting tougher and tougher to boot it up. And once I got the new one up and running, I couldn't get it to boot up at all. So I brought it in to get the data transferred onto a brand new backup drive for the new computer.
Mm-hmm.
And there was three drives total, the two old internal drives and the one external drive. And they only got one small 30-gig internal drive transferred over. And they said the other two that they couldn't do, that they could send them in, it would cost me about $1,700, $1,800 a drive to get the data transferred.
Yeah.
Ed, I think you and I do it for $1,750, wouldn't we? and make $1,725 in profit. This is not shouldn't be that hard.
Well, he did say that they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
They got one successfully done. Yeah. The other two, they said there was a drive failure in both of them, with the external drive and the small internal drive.
Yeah. Yeah. That, in other words, they physically failed, I think, is what they're saying. And if they have physically failed, those companies that do data recovery, when you've got a really critical one, will literally tear it apart and remount it. What are you going to say?
Would all of these fail at the same time? These can't all be failed hard drives.
They could be. I mean, you don't know. I mean, I don't know the skill level of the people that you brought it to, because there's two types of data recovery. There's software data recovery and there's hardware data recovery. Right. Software data recovery, which I doubt they even attempted, is far cheaper. Far cheaper. And Jeff, I would at least look at a company to check it out and see if it's even possible to do that.
And by the way, feel free to give a plug for your company.
I'm always not here to do that, but if you insist,
right. Go right ahead.
CompTech Services in Sterling Heights on Shaner and 19. We're online. You can find us on Facebook. You can search us CompTech Services. You'll find us all over the place. But, you know, there's multiple ways to do this. The price seems to me a little bit high, but it's normally about $500 a pop. That's what they will charge you initially for physical hardware.
Physically get it. Yeah. Yes.
If they take them and they're dressed in the white suit and it's a clean room and they go through and they disassemble it and they'll scrape the data, you know, a lot of things. There's multiple techniques.
Just kind of quickly for our listeners, you're that what looks like a little mysterious black box to you, if you've ever looked inside of your computer, that rectangular metal box is your hard drive usually, and what happens is that there are platters in there. They're like the old 45 record discs.
Like the old laser discs.
The old laser discs, exactly. And then there are needles that run along each one of those, and you may have four of them stacked on top of one another. Mm-hmm. They will physically take those things out, because what may have happened is one of the needle arms broke.
Or jammed,
and they will physically take those discs out and remount them. And then pull the information off of that, and that requires some skill and equipment.
Normally, I don't recommend this, but if my tricks don't work, and we're down to sending it out, I know they're going to take it apart and they're going to pull the discs out. So at that point, if I've tried a software recovery and I've tried a couple other little tricks that I have, and that doesn't work, a good old bang on the table sometimes is enough. To loosen those arms, but that's only at the point where I've tried everything and it's going to be shipped out.
Right, exactly.
Okay. You're saying software. I'm looking for data like, you know, the kids' pictures growing up. I mean, this goes over a series of 10 years.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, when I said software recovery, I mean that's the kind of attempt that there's a piece of software, a very expensive piece of software that will go through your hard drive, even if normal means don't work, and pull that data out.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. But then hardware is where they actually work on the hardware and take it apart. So it
sounds like the recommendation we're making to you, Jeff, is, you know, to try some company. And it could be Shane's company, CompQuest.
CompTech Services.
Excuse me. CompTech Service. Changed name in a while back.
Yeah.
CompTech Services in Sterling Heights, and or somebody near you who will do that kind of thing. A local shop. And that, one of the reasons we're more and more recommending local shops is that you've got some great resources there. People like Shane and Ed, who have been in business for a long time and have had their hands inside computers, who can tear these things apart and try to give you a shot at that first before you ship it out.
Well, Jim, I'll talk to you this week.
All right. Very good. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right. That's Jeff.
You know, the most dangerous thing in there in those, are those dust bunnies. That's.
I mean, there's. I mean, back in the day, we used to put them in a freezer.
Yep.
Sometimes.
Yep.
See how that works. Wrap it really good though, so you don't get them wet.
Moisture.
You don't want to get condensation inside of it, right?
But I will. I do want to say this: those people that do have to send out, there's a really good company, Drive Savers. I don't know if you've ever had them on your show.
No,
And I've not used them. So
they're. I've used them, and they're extremely good, and they're quick.
Drive Savers.
DriveSavers.com.
We should get, see if we can get hold of those guys.
The only group I've used in the past professionally was DataRecoveryGroup.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
I've used them too.
Yep.
So DataRecoveryGroup.com and DriveSavers.com. But before you even get there, folks, that is a last resort.
Check locally with somebody,
check
a local
locally.
Expert. Yes.
Check mm-hmm. locally. Guys, thanks so much again for being here. Gary, it's good to have you in.
Yep.
Ed Rudell, always good to have you here. And Shane, thank you so much for joining us.
Always.
And folks, by the way, on Sunday nights, usually somewhere early evening, I'll get the podcast up, and you can get it through going to internetadvisor.net. You can download it from there or through your favorite podcast download. I will say this, we're having some trouble with iTunes right now and still haven't quite figured out why. But the good news is you can simply go to internetadvisor.net and download it there or listen to it if you'd like from there. Thanks so much for being with us here. And for Ben Carpenter, you made a good choice playing with the grandchildren. We'll see you folks next week, same time.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisors Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.